Greetings once again to all of you out there from right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to the first word in conservative talk for 2011. Welcome to 2011. I hope you want to stay. Well, we'll see after today's show. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to have you aboard. I want to first comment on our good friends over at CNN for their choice of hosts for the New Year's Eve countdown. Why do you think it is at CNN that some producer, even years ago apparently, decided to team a partially closeted homo with a relatively repulsive skank in order to do their countdown? That's right, it was Anderson Cooper and a woman named Kathy Griffin, who I must say I'm not that familiar with, except that I've seen her in Anderson in years past. I wonder what kind of crowd that drew. I wonder if they'll have the ratings up for the skank and the homo over at CNN. I don't know. It didn't last long in our house. They didn't make the cut. Not that Fox News was any better. It was pretty weak. I would say Dick Clark's was probably the best, but man, I got to say to Dick, you might not want to go on screen anymore. I mean, we all love Dick Clark. I asked my wife, have you ever heard of Dick Clark? And she said, well, I think I've heard of him.
I don't know.
But she was relatively unfamiliar with Dick Clark. And seeing him on screen, I don't know that even those of us familiar with the poor fellow would have recognized him. More proof of the law, the second law of thermodynamics, and the fact that gravity eventually wins against everyone. Poor Dick Clark. Anyway, but we had a good time. We stayed up. We let the girls stay up till 10 and watch the New York ball drop, and we told them, that's it. It's New Year's. Go to bed. And they did. It's probably the last year we'll be able to pull that off with Nicole, the 9-year-old. She probably won't buy it next year, and she'll stay up till midnight like she wanted to do. All right. But let's go. We've got the first word in conservative talk for the year of 2011, and we're going to open up in Havana, Cuba. I don't mean literally, folks. We're not in Havana, Cuba yet. But listen to the broadcast, and you can make a judgment as to where we're headed. The news starts in Havana, Cuba, from the Associated Press. Cuba is a cash-strapped communist government they're down there, announced last Wednesday that soap, toothpaste, and detergent will be slashed from the citizens' monthly ration books. So no more free soap down in Cuba. Effective January 1st, personal cleanliness products will join a growing list of products cut from the ration books that islanders have come to rely on for a small but steady supply of basic goods. So for those of us who live El Norte in America, that's a term we'll want to remember. Don't forget that term. A small but steady supply of basic goods could be headed your way in 2011, because as Cuba begins to unshackle itself and abandon communism to some degree, those of us in El Norte, our leaders are just getting around to getting started with the whole ration card idea and the idea of feeding their citizens a small but steady supply of basic goods. It's 2011. I hope you want to stay. Now listen to this. Cubans currently pay about 25 centavos, which is about a penny, for their rationed soap. And they'll soon have to fork out 4 to 6 pesos for that same soap. What kind of quality soap do you think you get for a penny or even 6 pesos. It's probably not Irish Spring. It's probably not name brand soap. It's that white package with the black letter soap. That's what they get down in Cuba. And I just fear that it won't be long before we won't be able to buy our Irish Spring or our Zest, but we'll all be getting government soap. Authorities say the cuts are necessary to free Cuba, which pays for education, healthcare, housing, and transportation from a crushing economic burden. But critics on the island contend that by slashing the ration books, the state is breaking with what has been a sacred covenant of the 1959 revolution to provide all Cubans with the basics. So I find it interesting that the Associated Press quotes the critics in saying that the communists there are breaking the sacred covenant. You know, all religions have sacred covenants. You know, Jesus Christ promised that if you would believe that he rose from the dead and confess it with your mouth, that you'd be saved from the fire that's coming. Fidel Castro promised at least the basics, a small but steady supply of basic goods. So I'm gonna go with Jesus, and I'm going to buy my Irish Spring. And you can go with the communists and Barry and the Democrat Party and all of those, and you can get in line for your small but steady supply of basic goods. All right. Let's move on out of Havana, because it's creepy visiting Havana here in 2011, knowing that we're all just perhaps days away from devolving into Havana-like conditions, unless something changes. Well, let's go on with the news. I don't know why I want to mention this, but I feel compelled to mention this. This is from the Houston Chronicle. Val Kilmer, who's an actor that you may or may not be familiar with, owes nearly $500,000 in federal taxes, and a lien has been placed on the actor's property, including a New Mexico ranch that he has been trying to sell. Now, the Internal Revenue Service, according to the Houston Chronicle, filed the lien last month in Santa Fe, New Mexico, for $498,165, and that's just for Val's 2008 income taxes. Yeah, now, $500,000, and that's for 1 year. Now, you know what happens once the IRS uncovers 1 year of discrepancies? They have a tendency to start looking for more, so I don't know. Val may want to escape down to Havana. But listen to this. This is what caught my attention. Val Kilmer put his 5,300-acre Pecos River Ranch on the market for $33 million in 2009. The ranch is currently still listed, but for $18.5 million. Ouch! Wow. So from 33 mil down to 18.5 mil. Val, I feel for you, buddy. Man, and now the IRS is coming after the guy? I can't remember what Val Kilmer did, but I know that he was famous. The Iceman in Top Gun, okay. Oh, the Doors movie. I'll never forgive him for that. That's where he lost my attention. What was that, like 1990, 91? Anyway, we hope everything works out there for Val. He may have to go join Fidel's Revolutionary Guard. But I'd like to take a look at that ranch in New Mexico. 5,300 acres, only 18.5 mil. All right. Okay, now let's move to serious news. You're all familiar with the snowstorms that hit the East Coast this week. Well, we got snow here in Denver, but it didn't make the news. And I wasn't so mad about the snow, but the fact that it was 0 degrees on New Year's Eve, and I have all these fireworks in my basement, I didn't have the nerve to set a single one of them off. I didn't want to step out into the frigid cold. It was horrible. But in New York City, they got about 2 feet of snow. Well, listen to this from Fox News in New York. The chairman of the Municipal Labor Committee, Local 831, a union, which represents men and women of the New York City Sanitation Department, said there's no truth behind a rumor that his members worked slower during the blizzard of 2010. And I know what you're saying. How could unionized government workers possibly work any slower than they're already known to work? Is that possible? They would have to start dumping snow on the street to work any slower than they work on any given day. But rumors abound in New York that the union was involved in a budget protest, and so they left many streets unshoveled. Well, one of the union officials, Harry Naspali, he says from all accounts, the response to the blizzard was inadequate, but he says, my workers did not mess around with the snow. They worked as fast as they possibly could. He says, we had a blizzard. There was also an unusual amount of people on the streets on Sunday night, and those cars never made it back to the curbs. And we just couldn't get the plows in. And how dare you even accuse us of participating in a union slowdown? That's simply unheard of amongst unionized government workers. Well, from the New York Post, sanitation department bosses from the snow-slammed outer boroughs ordered their drivers to snarl the blizzard cleanup to protest budget cuts. And the New York Post says that was a disastrous move that turned streets into a minefield for emergency service vehicles. And this was all part of a budget protest over a raft of demotions, attrition, and budget cuts. Dan Halloran, a Republican from Queens, says they sent a message to the rest of the city that these particular labor issues are more important than snow removal. So, well, it's a he said, she said at this point, but I mean, we can all see with our own eyes what the streets of Queens and Brooklyn look like. And we read the stories about the little baby that died in the foyer of a building, about another person who had to have a leg amputated after waiting for hours for ambulance service. And I hope there's a full investigation, and these communist union officials who slowed down snow removal should be put on trial. I believe the rumors, but then again, I'm sort of pessimistic that way. I'm not a big believer in the unionization of government workers. But here we are. And in New York, there's probably still a foot of snow in front of many houses. Now, I don't know why it is that New Yorkers didn't just pick up shovels. I think a number of them probably did. But there was no way you could shovel fast enough to get an ambulance to that dying baby. And if indeed the unionized government officials were responsible and were involved in some sort of slowdown, I want heads to roll. And I'll just leave it at that. Let's move on to the war. This is from Reuters. A bomb killed at least 21 people outside a church in the Egyptian city of Alexandria early on New Year's Day. Now, that's the way Reuters introduces the story. What they should have said was a bomber killed at least 21 people, because the bomb is not self-aware. The bomb had no evil intent. But a bomb was placed in front of a Christian church in Alexandria, Egypt. According to Reuters, the attack prompted Christians to protest on the streets, and some Christians and Muslims hurled stones at each other. Egypt, they say, has stepped up security around Christian churches, and President Hosni Mubarak, an 82-year-old relic of the past, promised in a televised address that terrorists would not destabilize Egypt or divide Christians and Muslims. Just a note to Hosni. Islam and Christianity divide Christians and Muslims. It's pretty much a natural rift that can never be crossed. We are divided, Hosni. Although we should be able to live together without blowing each other up. But apparently in Egypt, asking Muslims to refrain from blowing up and killing Christians is just a bridge too far. Alexandria, by the way, is a famed city of antiquity, which a century ago was home to a mix of Muslims, Christians, Jews, and foreigners, but has recently become a stronghold for Islamic hardliners, and this is the worst attack on Egyptian Christians in a decade. So it's nothing new over there that Muslims are blowing up, burning, killing, robbing, raping, and beating Christians. But this just happens to be the worst one in a decade. The AP says the attack was dramatically different from past violence against Christians, which included shootings, but not serious bombings. See, that's when you know you're a victim of Christian persecution, when the news media talks about bombings of Christians and then serious bombings. So there have been bombings, but we're talking serious bombings now. And there have not been, to date, suicide attacks like this. Christians, mainly Orthodox Coptics, make up about 10% of Egypt's mainly Muslim population of nearly 80 million people, So you got 8 million Christians and 72 million Muslims. I don't know. If I'm a Christian in Egypt, I'm thinking Havana looks pretty good. I'll bring my own soap. At least they won't blow me up there. Man, we talked about that last week in Egypt, and it's just getting worse. Now, we talked also over the past 2 weeks about the regimes that our sons and daughters are propping up in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and how, well, I cannot support. I cannot support the propping up of backward, wicked Muslim regimes. But, well, listen to this. From Indianapolis, the AP, an Afghan security contractor who has been convicted of killing a U.S. Marine apparently was a frequent drug user who may have smoked opium or hashish hours before he shot the Marine. An Afghan court convicted the Marine's assailant in July and sentenced him to 15 years in prison. The person was working security for a construction company when he opened fire upon spotting a group of men with guns who turned out to be Marines. One member of the Marine squad told the Naval Investigation Service that the contractors had a history of shooting at Marines, and another said those same men often used drugs. Here's a quote from one of the Marines. He says, quote, "Pretty much everyone knows the security contractors routinely use drugs and work their posts while high on drugs." And these are our friends who are shooting our Marines as our sons and daughters work to prop up these backwards regimes. I mean, if I'm a Marine in Iraq or Afghanistan, I might want to rock and roll back home. Sit. Let me get back. Yeah, I'd rather go back to Indiana than hang out in Iraq. Propping up these Mohammedans. There's a word you don't hear very often anymore. That was another term that our good friend Winston Churchill used. The Mohammedans. Propping up the Mohammedans. It's just getting... All right, well, let's go deeper into the war file. As we blast off into 2011, China is preparing, according to one of their own defense ministers, he says, quote, "In the coming 5 years... the Chinese military will push forward preparations for military conflict in every strategic direction." That's according to Liang Guanli, who's one of the defense ministers there in China. He says, "We may be living in peaceful times now, but we can never forget war. Never send the horses south or put the bayonets and guns away." I wish that this guy was in charge of our Department of Defense. He didn't mention a single thing about homosexuals serving in the Chinese military. I'm sure he feels terribly about missing an opportunity to comment on such an important social issue. But he seems, for some reason, to be focused on preparations for war. According to this from the Telegraph in London, China repeatedly says it is planning, quote, "a peaceful rise," unquote. But the recent pace and scale of its military modernization has alarmed many neighbors, including Japan. Japan has described China's military buildup as a global concern, unquote, this past month. We already told you how they're developing an aircraft carrier. And China is also working on a carrier-killing ballistic missile that could sink U.S. carriers from afar, fundamentally reordering the balance of power in a region that has been dominated by the United States since the end of the Second World War. A peaceful rise, you say, there in China. A peaceful rise. Well, at least China is going to be able to rise, while our military is descending into a whirling, sucking vortex of sodomy and social experimentation. But who knows? Maybe the Chinese will befriend us in our hour of need. do you think? More from the war file. According to leaked U.S. diplomatic cables, now how many stories have started out that way in the past 6 months? Leaked cables, WikiLeaks, all of that. Well, here's what we found out. These leaked cables suggest that to the dismay of Americans, the Egyptian military continues to see Israel as its primary adversary more than 30 years after the two neighbors signed a peace treaty. So the Egyptian military, instead of helping us, their alleged ally in the fight against Muslim extremist terrorists, they're propping up their defenses of the Sinai. Yeah, rather than send troops to Iraq or Afghanistan, according to the Jerusalem Post, Egypt places emphasis on trying to achieve military parity with Israel through the acquisition of modern conventional arms, such as aircrafts and tanks. Now, according to a retired Egyptian army general named Hassam Suleim, he says Egypt continues to view the defense of Sinai as its core mission, and he said there are recurrent threats from Israeli officials that justify this military doctrine. In the leaked memos, leaked by PFC Bradley Manning and Julian Assange over there at WikiLeaks, in the memos, U.S. diplomats lament that the Egyptian military has a backward posture. They also criticize the military for assuming a direct role in the Egyptian economy, saying that the military stifles free market reform with large military-owned companies active in industries like retail, construction, and hospitality. The Egyptian army is in the hospitality business. They're probably not setting up many buffets for their allies in Israel, but apparently they're involved to some degree in the hospitality industry. So this gets to the heart of the whole WikiLeaks story, because we saw what happened with the attack on Christians in Egypt. And not that WikiLeaks needed to occur in order for the Muslims to blow up Christians. They do that quite well, aside from any outside influence. But it makes me wonder, what are the odds that with all this leaked WikiLeaks information, that intelligence services all over the world are poring over these documents, and that action is going to be taken by someone who's either offended by the leaked information or because it's just good quality intelligence, and people are going to be killed, people are going to be robbed, people are going to be arrested, people are going to be imprisoned based on the leaks from a Private Manning and Julian Assange, who want chaos. Well, and in the case of Assange, they want chicks. And in the case of Private Manning, well, we'll just leave that aside. But that's what they want, is chaos. They're true believers in the dogma that the liberal culture has taught them. Question authority, which has now become attack authority, and their desire is to destroy authority. And so the liberals who run our government have a hard time criticizing Mr. Assange. They may award him some type of medal because he's right down their alley. They've built the monster that's going to destroy them, or at least has the potential to destroy them. And I find that ironic and a small bit of poetic justice, although I would prefer that Mr. Assange and Mr. Manning were eliminated with extreme prejudice sooner rather than later. But you already knew I felt that way. Now, what does Assange have to say? According to Ynet News, Julian Assange said he holds the names of senior officials in the Arab world who visit U.S. embassies in their respective countries voluntarily to, quote, establish links, unquote, with the CIA. Assange says these officials are spies for the U.S. in these Muslim countries. He said this in an interview with Al Jazeera, the Muslim Arab radical TV network. He said the leaked documents in his possession show that Arab officials reveal sensitive information on their colleagues and respective countries. The WikiLeaks founder said the website would consider exposing the names of Arab officials only if it would be certain that it would not lead to their death. So he's concerned that this might lead to their death, yet he's threatening to release this information. Assange warned that the revelations may lead to dangerous coups in the Arab world. He added that WikiLeaks plans to reveal some 7,000 documents related to Egypt and its president, the aforementioned doddering 81-year-old Hosni Mubarak. Other leaked documents, he said, reveal information on the oil industry in the Arab world over the past few decades. Well, that's not going to be pretty. When the average Muslim street finds out that fast-talking Brits and Americans have basically bamboozled them out of their oil, the Arab street's not going to react well to that. So Assange is he's playing the game. He's pushing the envelope. And why is it that that all the might of the Western world can't seem to stop a fairy and a reprobate from destroying the intelligence infrastructure of the entire world? And like I said, I think it's because in their heart of hearts, these liberals like it. They want to bring it all down, man. That's what they were all about. All right, now, more from the war file. Now, this is from a WorldNet Daily story, and the headline is, Islamic terror, this is worse. So that's quite a headline. If there's something worse than Islamic terror, I want to know about it. Although I've already pointed out that it is the secular humanists who dominate Western culture who are far more dangerous to us on a day-to-day basis than Islamic terror. But that's not what the folks at WorldNet Daily are talking about. They say there's a new multinational threat that come from those who want a stateless society. No government, no rules, no police, no authority. And these groups have emerged partly along with Europe's growing financial crisis. Folks like Julian Assange and PFC Bradley Manning and various czars in the Barry Ho administration. WorldNet Daily says they are anarchists. Yeah, anarchists. So security experts note that these anarchists have been around ever since the 60s, back with the Baader-Meinhof gang and Red Army faction in Europe, clogging the streets outside meetings of the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, G20. They march, they destroy storefronts, they break windows, set fires, destroy vehicles, and confront police, and always lose the battle. But now analysts confirm they've seen an increase in the intensity and violence in the anarchists' arsenal of weapons. In recent days, anarchists planted an explosive device on a motorcycle in Athens, and letter bombs sent over the Christmas holidays to several embassies in Rome exploded, causing injuries, casualties. So anarchist groups, according to WorldNet Daily, have been set up in Italy, France, Germany, Greece, Spain, Australia, Holland, Switzerland, Sweden, Portugal, and in Eastern Europe countries such as Bulgaria, Belarus, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Ukraine, and even Russia. So the anarchists are organizing, which is kind of unusual that the anarchists are organizing, since they're against organization. But they're apparently willing to organize enough to propagate their anarchist views, after which I'm sure they'll disband after the entire world collapses in flames around them. And they'll be doing a dance and painting themselves blue. Anyway, I'm not as worried about these anarchists, frankly. Because, you know, you have a group of 30 or 40 anarchists in the street, 5 or 6 real men can send them all home crying and bleeding and pretty much end their quest for global anarchy. You need like 5 or 6 oil field workers from Texas can disband a group of 100 anarchists, a skinny little pale potheads out there. But now the secular humanists are going to be much harder to root out, much harder. And they're doing more damage every day than the Islamists or the anarchists could ever do. For example, from the Don't Ask, Don't Tell file, I know it's got its own file now, I hate to say it, but here's a shocker from WorldNet Daily. The methods used in the survey that military leaders have cited to support allowing homosexuals to practice their craft openly in the barracks, they say these methods border on fraud, according to a critic Folks are raising tough questions about the survey. You remember, folks. The military has to have a study to certify that open sodomy in the barracks isn't going to affect anything one way or another. Well, folks are raising tough questions about the survey size, data sampling, and research methodology used to generate the Pentagon study that has endorsed the promotion of open sodomy in the military. A leading voice from the American Legion says that these methods border on fraud. He's calling on the incoming 112th Congress to repeal the radical new law allowing the sodomization of the military. And a social science expert, a research expert, at the behest of WorldNet Daily, examined the report and said some of its methods are absurd and clearly don't reflect accurately what the average active-duty combat soldier, sailor, or airman thinks about the repeal of the policy and the allowing of open homosexuals to practice in the military. And, folks, I told you when this started a year ago that this was a kangaroo court. This was a done deal. This was set up. This was a kabuki dance. This whole survey was set up in advance. We all knew that. And their methods, you want to criticize their methods? How about some criticism of so-called conservative Christian and government leaders who are afraid to look back through human history and maybe quote just a few lines from God's word, the Bible, and we can throw all their methods out the door because it doesn't matter. We always knew that homosexuality was a crime. These days, instead of asking your weight, your height, they say, come on, shake it, boy. Is that going to be the new recruiting mantra on the posters? The new slogan? Come on in and shake it, boy. Oh, it's just unbelievable what they're doing to my Marine Corps. More from the headlines, the secular humanists destroying America and the Western world. From Reuters, a new social network website called OutMilitary is now online and encourages homosexuals in the military to find a friend. The site was launched just over a week ago, and it's called OutMilitary. And it's a sort of a Facebook for gay and lesbian military men and women. This is from Reuters. Now, OutMilitary currently has only 53 members, but its backers think that will change in the months ahead as the sodomization of the military becomes official. And this is how it starts. This is the promotion now of deviant behavior amongst America's finest. And where does it go? I mean, what Facebook has 2 billion users? And now the homosexuals in the military are going to be celebrated and encouraged. And will this website be banned from the computers there at military installations? Well, how could it be? It should be encouraged. It's a healthy alternative lifestyle there in the barracks. It's just, that's disgusting. All right. Now, so let's move now from the demented world of homosexual deviancy to the equally, well, not equally demented, but significantly similarly demented world of heterosexual deviancy. We're going to go to the Playboy Mansion. This is a story from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom. Apparently some of Hugh Hefner's former girlfriends, as he calls them, have become disenchanted with life in his harem at the Playboy Mansion over the years. Now, the Daily Mail introduces the story by saying, unfortunately for Hugh Hefner, some of his former girlfriends, well, why is it unfortunate for Mr. Hefner that some of the women that he's treated like prostitutes and whores are starting to, Well, they're starting to turn on him. I don't think it's unfortunate at all. I think it's fortunate for all of us that we get a view, a glimpse behind the curtain there at the Playboy Mansion. So you might wonder what was life like behind the glittering facade of the Playboy Mansion. Well, several of his ex-girlfriends are revealing just that. According to them, the Playboy Mansion, its glittery facade, disguises a grubby world where some girls feel there are no better than prostitutes paid pocket money by an octogenarian obsessive who funds plastic surgery to turn them into his physical ideal and then takes huge amounts of Viagra. It's just unbelievable. But could anyone be surprised that the Playboy Mansion turns out to be a pit of vile filth and disgust that's all gussied up for the cameras? Isabella St. James is one of Hefner's ex-whatever. She was a law school graduate, which proves she had the appropriate IQ to live at the Playboy Mansion. She moved in with Hefner back in 2002 with seven other of his official girlfriends. She says that Hefner likes to have anywhere between 3 and 15 girlfriends at any one time. She says, although we did our best to decorate our rooms and make them homey, the mattresses on our beds were disgusting, old, worn, and stained, and the sheets were the same. So when Hef brings in these supermodel types, he puts them in a filthy, disgusting pit of a room with old sheets and stained beds. Why? Well, because that's exactly what he thinks of them. And they accede to it, obviously. Now, eventually, this one particular slut, Isabella St. James, she persuaded Hef to pay for a new mattress and bed linen, but she says she had to turn in every single receipt before she was reimbursed. Talk about losing your self-respect and humanity and dignity. I mean, to not have the gumption to go buy your own mattress and bed sheet and lay down the law to this creep, she actually took the money for it. Anyway, just creepy. She says Hefner paid all of his girlfriends. She said, listen to this. This is... Every Friday morning, we had to go to Hef's room, wait while he picked up the dog poo off the carpet, and then ask for our allowance, $1,000 that he counted out in crisp $100 bills from a safe in one of his bookcases. She says Hef would always use the occasion to bring up anything he wasn't happy about while he was doling out the money to his prostitutes. She says he used it as a weapon. Well... Now, Hugh Hefner is celebrated by the secular humanists and the liberals who defend his free speech rights. And yet, here's how he treats women. Here's the reality of the Playboy Mansion, right there in your face. And I wonder if the National Organization of Women will be manning the lines of the protests outside the Playboy Mansion, or... will they be lining up to kiss his ring and get some of his money? We'll just have to see about that. All right. Now, an update on a very important story we did last week. In one of his last official acts before leaving office, New Mexico's governor has refused to pardon Billy the Kid. Yeah. Governor Bill Richardson told the Associated Press, he said, quote, "I felt I could not rewrite history," unquote. Well, that's a relief. It's like one of the first times one of these secular humanists has admitted that they can't rewrite history. It's kind of refreshing to think that at least Bill Richardson understands that he can't rewrite history, because the rest of them, well, seem to think they can just fine. Anyway, he said, here we go. According to the AP, the prospect of a pardon for the notorious frontier figure Billy the Kid drew international attention to New Mexico. So... Bill Richardson did achieve his ends in promoting his rather desolate state, promoting tourism, I suppose, to go and ponder a pardon for Billy the Kid. I guess he got the attention he wanted. That was pretty much all he wanted. That's good, because I thought he was borderline delusional. Anyway, Billy the Kid did murder several people there in New Mexico. And so he shall not be pardoned by Bill Richardson, for whatever that's worth. I just wanted to point out that Bill Richardson's not completely lost his mind, although he is still very dangerous to you and your children. All right. Now, speaking of people who are dangerous to you and me and our children, America withdrew its ambassador from Lebanon back after the assassination of Rafiq Hariri. You remember when he was killed in a Beirut truck bombing, and everybody knows that Syria blew up the truck. This is from the Associated Press. Well, Barack Hussein Obama has bypassed the U.S. Senate and directly appointed four new ambassadors, including Robert Ford, who will become the first U.S. envoy to Syria since they blew up Rafiq Hariri back in 2005. So Barry has decided to reward the Syrians by reopening the American embassy there and appointing a new ambassador. Thank you very much, Mr. Obama. We appreciate you rewarding bad behavior, and we appreciate you putting further at risk Western civilization. But we shouldn't be surprised about any of that. Now, who's resisting Barry and his suicide mission to destroy the country? Well, that's probably an exaggeration. He's not on a literal suicide mission. He would like to survive the destruction of America and go on to become head of the UN or something like that, I'm sure. But who's resisting? I'll tell you who. Texas is resisting. That's right. According to the EPA, emissions in Texas are too high. Emissions are too toxic, and Texas water is being harmed. So according to the EPA, the governing officials there in Texas are conspiring to poison their people, the air and the water. And according to this story from the AP, Texas and the EPA have disagreed for years over pollution regulation, but the hostility intensified recently with Republican Governor Rick Perry accusing the EPA and the Barry Ho administration of overstepping boundaries and meddling in states' rights. With a more conservative state legislature about to convene next year, there's appetite in Texas to keep up the fight. Now, the EPA, they are flexing their muscles in Texas, according to the AP, and they say they may be able to send a message to other states that the days when the agency allowed contentious issues to languish unresolved have ended. Other states have had their differences with the EPA, and at least a dozen have come together in a lawsuit along with Texas challenging the EPA's onerous new greenhouse gas regulations. What's the greenhouse gas they seek to regulate? It's carbon dioxide, which is air for plants and trees. Now, I don't know what the EPA has against plants and trees, why they would want to deprive the beautiful plants and trees that they love so much of air, but apparently they do. The EPA may be a bit schizophrenic, or is anyone surprised at that? Texas Attorney General, though, Greg Abbott, is accusing the Ho administration of imposing, quote, unilaterally its agenda on the American people, unquote. And he's asked a federal appeals court in Washington to block the EPA from taking over greenhouse gas permits until the court can review the case. So about 200 industrial facilities in Texas continue to operate, listen to this, with air and water permits that are either out of date or have been disapproved by the EPA. Texas children are dropping like flies. They're choking, they're gagging, they're turning blue, and they're dying in the streets. And the EPA can only look as these industrial facilities operate with permits that are out of date or have been outright rejected by our saviors at the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, the agency believes that these evil industrial facilities are releasing a variety of metals and chemicals into the air and water that would, under the new regulations, no longer be permitted. Now, they don't say that they would kill children or poison anyone or make anybody sick or even make the water taste funny. They're just saying it would not be permitted. So Texas is doing something that the secular humanists who have conquered America say should not be permitted. Texas is looking better and better all the time. I tell you what, if it wasn't such a barren wasteland, I wouldn't mind moving back to Texas. Well, that's an exaggeration. Texas is not a complete barren wasteland. I happen to grow up out in West Texas, 1,000 miles southwest of anything civilized, outside of Odessa, Midland. And so you can understand why Texas, to me, engenders visions of a barren moonscape, because that's what West Texas looked like. Although there was a lot of oil out there, lots of money to be made. Anyway, I speak Texan, so if the time comes to flee to Texas, I'll at least be able to communicate with the locals and navigate the local geopolitical scenery down there. All right. So here, one more on the secular humanists and their environmental religion. From Honolulu, Hawaii, from Fox News, after failing to get climate change legislation through Congress, the Barry Ho administration plans on pushing through its environmental policies through other means. This week, new carbon emission limits will be put forward as the EPA prepares regulations that would force companies to get permits to release greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. The administration says it has the power to issue the regulation. And we'll just see, Barry, because I think Texas is taking offense. We care a lot. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. We're rounding third and heading to home on the home of the first word in conservative talk for the year 2011. We are here in 2011. I hope you want to stay. Let's move now in our closing moments to the culture file. This is from WorldNet Daily again. They do a great job over at WorldNet Daily. I like those folks. But this is a story about death panels. And for those of you who are concerned about the death panels in the new healthcare regulation put forth by Barry Ho and Nancy Pelosi and all those evil, evil, like comic book characters, isn't it amazing that these type of creeps could actually run the country and have power? It's as if I've slipped into a Batman comic. Somebody call Batman. Anyway, those of you who are concerned about these death panels, I want to inform you that these death panels in some form have existed since the late 1960s. When Americans agreed to take the dime from Medicare to pay for their pills and their prosthetics and their health care and their diabetic supplies, well, we agreed to death panels back then. And government health care has been killing people for 50 years. But now everyone's upset because the death panels are truly unmasked and in your face. Here's a story from WorldNet Daily. At the request of several Democratic lawmakers, the Barry Ho administration has quietly slipped language into a Medicare regulation paying doctors to provide what they call end-of-life consultations with patients. Doctors will instruct patients how to write advanced directives, listing what types of treatment they wish to receive or not receive. Can you see it, Grandma? Well, Doc, I'm not sure what I would want to receive or not receive. Here's a whole list of things that could happen to me. Do you think I should get this? No. Should I ask for this? No. Well, if I need to be fed, should I? No. I might need water. No. Well, if I'm not ambulatory and I'm not able, I might need it. No. Well, okay, you're the doctor. Okay, Granny signs off and. Before too long, she's denied the health care that would extend her life from 84 to 86, and the government dispatches her and logs a significant savings in the balance sheet. Well, folks, this has been going on since the 60s. Are you a bunch of stupid lemmings who are just waking up and realizing what these people have been doing? They've been butchering children in the womb for 40 years, legally. And now you're worried about the death panels? The death panels have been here, folks. Anyway. Judy Brown from American Life League, she says Congress must step up to cancel this regulation. She says, if not, a death certificate is written for an awful lot of elderly people. Well, it's nice of you to join the party, Judy. This was going on back when you were politically sentient in the 60s. I don't know that Judy has been screaming a lot about Medicare and the wholesale discarding of elderly, sick, unloved, unwanted, inconvenient people that has been happening since we bowed the knee to the Great Society back in the 60s. But I agree with Judy, and I'm thankful that Judy is raising an alarm, even at this late date. The original legislation in the Berryhill Healthcare provided for end-of-life counseling once every 5 years, but the new regulation, the original legislation in Medicare provided for end-of-life counseling once every 5 years, but the new regulation pays doctors to counsel their patients every year during their annual, quote, wellness appointment, unquote, that is provided by Medicare. So gracious at Medicare to provide an annual wellness appointment to discuss what I may or may not want in my final days when my decision-making and my judgment becomes just a little bit cloudy and I may be desperate to hang on for dear life. But our good friends at Medicare will have checked the boxes so that the state-run healthcare dispensers know what to dispense, but more importantly, what to withhold. So your government is your doctor. Oof. All right. Now, what kind of fruit is this tree of secular humanist government producing? Dateline Dallas from Fox News in Phoenix. A Dallas toddler has died after he was dropped in a pot of boiling water. 16-month-old Jabraylin Bobliss died from injuries and infections 36 days after police say he was deliberately burned by the live-in boyfriend of the child's mother, who happens to be a convicted murderer named Carnelius Delaney Simmons. The murderer, by the way, he was already a murderer, part of the catch-and-release program of our secular humanist justice system. The murderer remains in the Dallas County Jail on a felony charge of injury to a child that will likely be upgraded to murder, possibly manslaughter. I mean, what more do you say about that, folks? This is America, circa 2011. And this is Texas, the last hope for America. And the soul of the people there is calloused and cold and vicious against children. Let's move to New Jersey. And this is a Camden, New Jersey woman was in police custody over the weekend, charged with setting her boyfriend on fire on New Year's Eve. Setting him on fire, I said. She told police she couldn't find her car keys, and when she tried to wake her live-in boyfriend, who was asleep on the couch, he wouldn't wake up, so she lit a cigarette and dropped a match on the blanket, which the blanket erupted into flames. So that was New Year's Eve. That was the fireworks for New Year's Eve as interpreted and presented by the modern dwellers of Camden, New Jersey. Set her boyfriend on fire. It's state of domestic tranquility in the tri-state area there. All right, from the Justice File. Now, this is a story that I've thought a lot about, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Maybe you people can give me some input. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour has suspended the sentences of two women, Gladys Scott and her sister Jamie Scott, on the condition that the latter must provide a kidney to the former. Each of the Scott sisters got two life sentences after they were convicted by a jury of robbing two people. But now the Department of Corrections believes the sisters no longer pose a threat to society. Now here's what they did. In 1993, Gladys and Jamie Scott were arrested and charged with leading two men into an armed ambush. Court records show that these two men were robbed by three teenagers who hit them with a shotgun and took their wallets. So the sisters were convicted of armed robbery, and they were sentenced to life in prison, which to me is getting off light. Armed robbery, you should be put to death. But these sisters have languished there in prison since sometime in the 90s, and now one of them is on dialysis. So here's where we get to the money. Remember I told you that we bowed our knee to the Great Society and Medicare and Medicaid back in the 60s. And we've taken the money, and they have given us in return a slow but steady supply of bare basics when it comes to health care. But they've also been dealing death. And it's corrupted everything. Because listen to this. Why do you think Haley Barbour is letting these two women out of prison? Is it a Solomonic act of a great noble leader who sees that these women's sentences were far too severe for their crime, and he's decided in his eminent wisdom to release them on humanitarian grounds? No. It basically comes down to money. Jamie Scott's dialysis cost the state of Mississippi about $190,000 a year. So Haley Barbour's saying, look, let's have the one criminal give the other criminal her kidney, and we'll let them both out of jail, setting a poor example for everyone, but we'll save $190,000. We can rack that up in the black column as our state teeters on the edge of financial collapse. So the Bible says you shall take no ransom for the life of a criminal, but Haley Barbour's willing to set justice aside for $190,000 a year. And I don't think the dialysis should have been an issue after these women were executed upon their conviction of the crime. But it has become an issue because, well, justice is perverted and corrupt, and I don't need to tell you all that. You know all. All right. Speaking of corrupt, perverted, stupid justice, California, this is from the La Mesa newspaper. California, on January 1st, enacted 725 new laws. 725 new laws. Can you find justice in California? No, you cannot, but you can find a myriad of laws. Let me just hit some of the highlights. One of the new laws prevents insurance companies from charging different rates for men and women for identical coverage. Big justice issue there. One prevents landlords from evicting tenants who are victims of domestic abuse or violence or stalking. Another new law will increase penalties, parole violations, and oversight of sex offenders, including a one-strike life without parole penalty for some sex offenders, as we determine that they deserve that. Another new law will make food stamps an acceptable form of payment at a farmer's market through an electronic bank transfer process. Yes. Another new law makes it a misdemeanor to maliciously impersonate someone via a social media outlet or through email. Preserving justice on the internet in California. Listen to this. Another new law in California allows the state to slap parents with a $2,000 fine if their K-8 child misses more than 10% of the school year without a valid excuse. It also allows the state to punish parents with up to a year in prison for the misdemeanor of allowing your kid to escape the public schools. Another new law will require new California buildings to be energy efficient. That's delightful. Another makes the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana an infraction with just a penalty of $100. And finally, after basically legalizing marijuana, another new law bans the use of trans fats in food facilities. So you can smoke your bong, but you can't have fries with that in California. Meanwhile, you can't find justice in California. Women and children in California live in fear for their lives at the hands of criminals and a government that can use the law as a weapon against its very own citizens. A tragedy. The perversion of justice is a tragedy that will destroy this nation if it is not corrected. And on that note, another perversion of justice from Life News. This is written by a fellow that I don't believe I care for. I'm not sure who it is, but I don't like his attitude. The Personhood Amendment, some pro-lifers advocated in Nevada, hope to get on the ballot, has lost in a case decided by the Nevada Supreme Court. The state high court rejected a lawsuit filed by amendment backers saying that the 2010 election is over and there's no reason to continue the case. You remember the Personhood Amendment was thrown off the ballot in Nevada. They said it was too broad and it affected too many laws. And is there anything else we could say to just avoid this conversation? Please go home, all you Christians. Well, the author of this Life News article whose name I don't know, but I can tell you I don't like whoever this is. And generally, I like the stuff I read in Life News, but I'm not liking the attitude here. The author says, not every pro-life group in the state of Nevada was on board, some saying it was a waste of money, it would be a certain loss, there are better methods for ending and reducing abortions. Don Nelson, the president of Nevada Life, said money should be put towards education, legislation that has reduced abortion, or electing pro-life candidates who can help change the courts so personhood amendments, once passed, could actually be upheld. He says, quote, right now, we feel those measures will yield more progress for the pro-life movement. That's according to Don Nelson. And Don, we also know that those measures will give you more fundraising opportunities for those of you who make a considerable living in the pro-life industry. Yes, these alleged pro-lifers say that the focus needs to be placed on changing what is currently a pro-abortion high court. Hey, we've been suckered into that for 30 years. You think we're still buying that? Change the Supreme Court. Unbelievable. What's the fault? Oh, here's the final line that really, really got me upset. The author of this Life News article says, with potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars and tens of thousands of man hours spent by pro-life advocates supporting personhood measures, some backers in Colorado of the Colorado Person Amendment may reconsider supporting the measure a third time in favor of working to ensure pro-abortion President Barack Obama doesn't win in Colorado in his bid for re-election. Now, I don't know who the author of this article has been talking to. He doesn't quote anyone for this, as if he's talked to people involved in person in Colorado and they've expressed some concern about pursuing a third attempt at personhood legislation and instead shifting our considerable efforts to defeating Barry Ho in the upcoming election. He doesn't quote anyone here, and he hasn't talked to anyone in Colorado. Personally, I know for a fact that the supporters of personhood in Colorado could care less who the president of the United States is in 2012. What they will work toward is the restoration of the personhood of every human being, despite the efforts against them by the pro-life industry, the likes of Don Nelson of Nevada Life, and whoever the slimy dirtbag is who writes for LifeNews.com. Just get out. All right. Now, finally, a couple more stories here. Okay. This is from the Culture File. I got rather upset there. I apologize. I'm going to calm down. From Reuters, children are growing up thinking that marriages are not meant to last because so many athletic and pop stars have high-profile affairs and breakups, an expert has warned. So that's where we are, folks. It takes an expert to warn us about these type of things. Reg Bailey, who's leading a British government review of the sexualization of childhood, is expected to consider the issue in a report he is preparing for the Department of Education there in Britain. He says, quote, I think there's a fair body of evidence out there that suggests that children are very influenced by certain individuals, particularly those in the public eye, a great deal, whether they are pop stars or sports people, he says, unquote. Yeah, duh. No kidding. Of course these Hollywood and sports deviants impact our children. Our children pay attention to these people. People by nature pay attention to people who have achieved success that is out of the ordinary, which is what a role model is. Why do people pay attention to Tiger Woods so much back before we found out he was a perv? It was because the level of success he had achieved at golf was amazing. So by nature, he's a role model. And rock stars and pop stars and music stars and rap stars, they all influence children far more in most cases than their parents or the culture at large. Anyway, Jamie Murdoch of a charity over in Britain, she says, quote, actions have consequences and young people are growing up in a media influence culture where they perceive that having an affair is normal and a marriage that lasts is something which even many successful people can aspire to. Do you hear that? Even successful people, they say, can't keep their marriage together. And folks, I think if you can't keep a marriage together, I don't know how you define yourself as successful. But apparently, the world, as dominated by the secular, humanist, socialist structures that have that have taken the reins of power over Western civilization, they say that you can be successful even if you destroy your own family with your own hands. And I disagree. Now, on that note, from CNN, John Cougar Mellencamp, known for his nostalgic songs about the heartland of America, is divorcing his wife, Elaine, after 20 years. Well, fortunately, nobody's paying attention to him. Well, I shouldn't say that. God is paying attention, John. Nobody may be buying your records, but God's keeping a record. So here's a statement released by the publicist for John and Elaine Mellencamp. They say that they are, quote, proud of their 20 years together and are very happy with their accomplishments, both as parents and as a family. Bring in the divorce lawyers. We're proud and successful. Great accomplishments. Let's set it all on fire in front of God and everybody so the kids can watch. 20 years, destroyed. And yes, yes, America is watching. And so is God. All right, finally, folks, we all watched as the Barry Ho curse struck this past week. It struck Michael Vick, Philadelphia Eagles quarterback, last Tuesday in the delayed game. You remember Barry Ho called up, made some comments about how great it was that Vic got a second chance. And Vic went out on the field and had a total utter meltdown and was destroyed by the hapless Minnesota Vikings. Just embarrassing. I just want to ask Barry Ho to just shut up. Stop commenting on people and ruining their lives. But here's the thing. On Fox News, one Tucker Carlson, who's just a puke, just a maggoty little puke who I really don't like. Here's what he said about Michael Vick's situation. Tucker Carlson said, "Look, I'm a Christian. I've made mistakes myself. I believe fervently in second chances. But Michael Vick killed dogs, and he did it in a heartless and cruel way, and I think, personally, he should have been executed for that." Tucker Carlson believes that Michael Vick should have been executed for mistreating his property, I suppose. Anyway, I'm not for anybody being mean to dogs, but I want to see Michael Vick win the Super Bowl and declare his faith in Jesus Christ on national television. That's been my prayer for Michael Vick, and I hope Barry Hole just stay out of the way. Anyway, that's it. That's the worldview. There's no point to that story. I just wanted to get that in there. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.